Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz Today.
It all comes down to Stormy, doesn't it? Well, at least politically, for those who hate Trump, it does. It's all about Stormy Daniels, nothing else but Stormy Daniels. But what do you expect? You've got a January 6th indictment that the Supreme Court is looking at to see whether or not the president has immunity. You've got Fannie Willis down there in Fulton County, where an appeals court says it will consider the effort to disqualify her from this case that she has brought, utilizing RICO racketeering statutes in the state. Fannie Willis has a different problem, is that she can't keep it in her pants. Hiring her lover, Nathan Wade, to be the prosecutor, paying him more than anybody else got paid, while he paid for the vacations that she went on, and she allegedly paid him back in cash, which, as you know, is how all great relationships work.
All right.
Hold on. This just in. That's not how it works.
It's embarrassing!
Pretty much. That's why nobody's talking about the case. Nobody's talked about this case for months. And then you get to the classified documents. And what happens yesterday? District Court Judge Aileen Cannon postpones the trial indefinitely, stating, and I quote, "The court also determines that finalization of a trial date at this juncture, before resolution of the myriad and interconnected pretrial remaining issues, would be imprudent and inconsistent," and I'm quoting here, "with the court's duty to fulfill and fairly consider the various pretrial motions before the court. The court therefore vacates the current May 20th, 2024 trial date to be reset by separate order following resolution of the matters before the court." And that's just the start of where this story is. Tony Katz Today. What you doing, boo? 833-GOT-TONY, 833-468-8669. The postponing of the case is only part of the story. But let's discuss what is. You have these cases that were all brought, all these indictments brought, as a way to interfere with the election. We are at the stage where this is not a debatable subject. I know some people out there still want to claim, Trump this. No. They were set up in this way, laid out in this way, to, without question, interfere with the election. That was their purpose. When I say it's not a debate, I'm not saying that you can't debate it. I'm just saying that you would be wrong. There is no question or conversation about this. And certainly, even if you want to argue there is a question or conversation, that question is yours and yours alone for whatever chat room you run late at night with other people. If you ask Americans, they are completely bought in on the reality. This trial being postponed is brutal for the people who wanted to sideline Donald Trump. Remember, I am not a 24/7 Trump guy. And I never have been. I take what is good, I excoriate what's bad. I'm not a never Trumper. Never Trump is the most ridiculous concept the world has ever seen. Still to this day, there is nothing more ridiculous than being a never Trumper. Well, it could be thinking that sending your kid to Columbia is a good idea, right? Maybe that tops it. Being a never Trumper is just remarkably daft and not conservative by any measure. Every time I see someone like Rick Wilson on cable news, I laugh a little bit and throw up a little bit in my mouth because it's just so funny and disgusting that people actually still refer to him as a guy on the political right. That's over. This is a guy who's broken and figured out his grift. That's all. That is it and nothing else. The changing of this. The changing of this. The moving of the, or this, the indefinite suspension of this trial. This is a big deal. A big deal. But there is a bigger deal. There is a bigger deal that you are not catching in media because this has been really, really brushed under the rug by those people who move the narrative, which is cable news and other news outlets. This is the story of the setup. Now, to understand the story, you have to understand that one of the charges here is that allegations, I won't say charges, say allegations, more broader sense. Trump had classified documents, wouldn't give them back to the National Archives, and a raid had to be performed at Mar-a-Lago to get the classified documents back. We know this part of the story. Here's the part of the story that we don't know. We didn't know until recently when the judge in this case, Aileen Cannon, when she released some information last month. What she released was information regarding an FBI agent and the General Services Administration. Just figure some government agency that takes too much of our money. The General Services Agency had the boxes. Wait, Tony. No. Trump had the boxes and then the FBI conducted the raid to get the boxes. No, that's not the story. That isn't the story. The documents released last month and you've got Julie Kelly, who has been reporting on this, Matt Margulies reporting over at PJ Media. In the documents that were released, in these documents were exhibits, motions, and other filings that supposedly, allegedly, show communication between the Biden White House and the National Archives. Well, actually, these documents are separate. Let me say it again. What these documents that were held by the General Services Administration, what they show is that these documents were in the hands of the GSA, and then they called the Trump team and said, hey, we've got your boxes. You have to come pick them up. And the Trump team said, we have to do what now? We've got these boxes. They're your boxes. You have to go pick them up. So the Trump team picked up the boxes. The boxes were then put at Mar-a-Lago. Then the raid took place, and what was in the boxes? The classified documents that everybody says Trump had in his possession. What Julie Kelly is saying is that when this happened, the testimony from the FBI agent, and I'm quoting here, one of the things I wanted to talk about, if you remember sometime after the administration ended, GSA had approximately 6 pallets of items, boxes, I believe, that were stored in Virginia. And at some point, I guess there were maybe a time limit, I'm not entirely sure, they contacted the Office of 45, meaning former President Trump, to inform them that, you know, they have to go. They, or someone, has to pick them up, or they have to be shipped, or something to that effect. Does this ring a bell at all with you? So the boxes that Trump's team were told they had to pick up were the boxes that had classified documents that the FBI is saying, hey, he's got classified documents, and that's the basis for this entire trial to begin with? Trump having classified documents is based on Biden's administration saying you have to pick up these boxes and then claiming, oh, look what we found in these boxes that you had. holy you-know-what. That's nuts. There is no other way to describe that except as a setup based on the information we have right now. Based on what it is that we are seeing. That this is where these boxes came from. That is not to say, and I think we would might hear that, no, these were other boxes. It's certainly possible that Trump had another box. It's possible. Remember, Biden had classified documents. Former Vice President Pence found he had a couple of classified documents. Well, it comes from an overclassification. We classify too many things, but it drives me crazy. And certainly it was disgusting that when Biden does it, it's no big deal, even though he had no right to have access to classified documents as a senator or as vice president. Yet somehow when Trump does it, it is the end of civilization, even though he's the president and one could argue he could declassify anything he chooses. But that they came from boxes held by the Biden administration that then forced the Trump team to pick up and then said, look what you've got. It is getting harder and harder to trust people in today's society. You know, there's the desire to win, and then there's what we're seeing. And by the way, this is so duplicitous, it doesn't even smell like Joe Biden. It smells like Hillary Clinton. Which, I get you, is not a very nice thing to say.
OMG, are you kidding me right now?
I don't think anybody wants to know about the smell of Hillary Clinton. But this is exactly the kind of duplicitousness that she would come up with. Trump and Russia? That's all Hillary. Remember, Hillary was there for Watergate and believed that Richard Nixon shouldn't be allowed the use of a lawyer in his defense. That's Hillary. This totally reeks of Hillary Clinton. This kind of duplicitousness, this kind of despicableness, it reeks of Hillary.
Ew, David.
You meant ew, Hillary, but I'll go with it. Oh, now there is more to this story as well. About this explains why they're paying so much attention to Stormy Daniels. I'll get to that a little bit later. But this needs some more investigation. About these boxes, about the Trump team, and what classified documents were found where, and whether or not this is all a setup. Speaking of setups, this leads us to the words of former CIA director former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Biden, Israel, and Ukraine. I've got that story coming up. Keep it here. I'm Tony Katz. So Corinne Jean-Pierre is on a plane. She's the White House press secretary. You've seen pictures. And she's being asked a question about the census. I said, this is interesting.
The House will vote this week on a bill that will add a citizenship question to the U.S. Census. Does the administration believe that non-citizens should be counted toward congressional and electoral college?
I've not talked to anybody on the team about that. That's new to me, so I would have to. I don't want to get ahead of our team.
There's a lot of things that are new to Corinne Jean-Pierre. Tony Katz today. The question is, does the administration believe that non-citizens should be counted toward congressional electoral college apportionment? And her answer is, that's new to me. Well, isn't the answer no? Non-citizens should have absolutely no say and should not be counted? Isn't the Constitution clear about subject to the jurisdiction thereof? Just that is the citizenship clause, is it not? Here it is, the 14th Amendment.
all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protections of the law. Now, let me make sure where we're going here. If you want to argue that this is about Electoral College, this is about determining the makeup of districts because there are people, even if they're non-citizens, who live in those districts or live in those states. Interesting. Because they wouldn't actually be voting. But what they would be given is power. And that power would come from other places. If you want to argue that people who are here illegally should have an impact on the Electoral College, the number of Electoral College votes that a state has, well, then you're saying that places like Texas and California should have some level of undue influence. That they don't have more citizens, they have more takers on because they've allowed themselves to be a sanctuary, this, that, or whatever. That's pretty messed up. I would argue that's pretty messed up. Now, we should also ask ourselves, is there a problem with asking a citizenship question? I don't think that there is an issue with asking that. Is the issue that if you ask that question, people won't answer it? The Equal Representation Act calls for apportioning U.S. House seats to U.S. presidential electors based only on a state's population of U.S. citizens. Immigrants, regardless of their migratory status, now figure in apportionment but wouldn't under the change. I want to know where the issue is. No, seriously, I want to know where the constitutional issue is. Is it, as I just read it, subject to the jurisdiction thereof? So if someone's in the country, they are under the jurisdiction. Because let me change how I looked at it at the first. We're talking about people who are here illegally. But what if somebody is here legally and working through the process? You and I are never bothered by that person. It's welcome. Hey, how are you? Good to see you. Want a beer? A whole thing. It's people who are here illegally that become the issue. So should they be counted? The Constitution says what it says. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States. We see that's just it. They're not citizens because they are not born and not yet naturalized. But this says, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Oh, this is interesting. Part of me wants them to pass it so I see if the Supreme Court takes it up. I wonder where we would be in this. I wonder what their argument would be. That's a little heavy, right? That's a question about the reading. Because I read, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, would be anybody in that jurisdiction. For example, I'm a citizen of Indiana. I'm not a citizen of Tulsa, Oklahoma. But if I was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, wouldn't I be subject to the jurisdiction thereof? By nature. Because I'm there. Even though I live in Indiana. So that's how I think it applies. I'll be very curious to see what happens in the House with this. But I think it interesting that going back to Corinne Jean-Pierre, it's new to her. It's new to her. I don't know. You know, maybe I'm wrong with my argument that her response should have been, well, of course not. But this is the Biden administration. Anything that makes illegal immigration not easier, because they never separate between legal and illegal immigration, do they? And they should. which gets me to my conversation with retired Border Patrol Chief Chris Klemm. That's next. I'm Tony Katz.
I wasn't here after October 7th on the campus. I'm sure the protesters were all very upset at the fact that Hamas went into Israeli communities and baked babies in ovens, raped women, assassinated elderly people in very brutal ways. I'm sure they were very upset about that and rowdy. Oh, no, they weren't. That's right. They didn't care about that. They were completely fine with those massacres happening, and they had no concern about that. And I think that that says anything. I also hear this stuff about occupation. The Gaza Strip is not occupied, okay? That's been Hamas's sanctuary for many years now. And did they create opportunities for people? Did they utilize the natural resources? No. They focused their efforts on terrorism. And that's what's happened. And so so much of this is just such a farce that it's just kind of embarrassing to even hear some of this nonsense.
Now, that's Ron DeSantis on the campus of University of Florida. Punching. Just punching. I mean, that's all there is to it. And certainly, as we have seen, the so-called protesters don't care about what Hamas does at all. They favor it. There are no pro-Palestinian protesters. They're all pro-Hamas. And they are all about our end, our destruction. We see it everywhere. We see it in every conversation. We see it in every act of violence. They were going after Israelis in Greece, literally trying to hunt them down. I forget which country people were getting attacked by quote-unquote Palestinians carrying lumber, carrying 2x4s and hitting people in the head. The threats everywhere. None of these people are talking two-state solution. None of these people are talking, well, Hamas should give back the hostages. No. Nothing except Israel's destruction and America's destruction. They are who they are. This is going to lead us to a conversation about force. Tony Katz today. What's going on? 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. But while Ron DeSantis is there on the campus of the University of Florida, also there is Ben Sasse, the former senator from Nebraska, who's the president of the University of Florida. He is the president. And he made a statement. I'm going to play it for you in full. There might be some crowd noise in the background. So producer Jason Finger on the dump button. You never know. But I want you to hear what leadership sounds like. What clarity sounds like. Listen.
Ben. Governor, welcome. Chair Husseini, Vice Chair Patel, Chancellor Rodriguez, leaders of our legislature, members of the press, we're glad to have you on campus today. I will be brief. I have four simple messages. First, to the Floridians who pay our bills, the University of Florida will always uphold speech and assembly rights, and we will also always follow the law. Too much of higher education has been captured by a lot of nonsense over the course of the last weeks, and that won't happen at the University of Florida. To the law enforcement officers who have kept things peaceful, thank you. Your professionalism has been amazing. Over the course of the last 2 weeks in particular, you have been long-suffering, giving protesters the right to exercise their free speech rights, but also the opportunity to come into compliance with our time, place, and manner restrictions. Our goal has not been to arrest. It has been to help people get into compliance with the law. And what you have done in the face of being spit on, being shouted at with profanities, has been amazing. The professionalism of our law enforcement government is a model for lots and lots of people across the country. To the protesters, you have heard us say this again and again. You have a constitutional right to protest, and we will protect that. But anyone who crosses the line with prohibited actions will face the consequences. This is a big university where not everyone is going to agree. We have 86,000 souls on this campus, and we will treat each other with respect. Unlike many institutions across the country, I'm incredibly proud that over the course of our 21 commencements over the last 6-plus days, we were able to celebrate our students and celebrate their families, which is the purpose of the commencement time. Too often in our time and place, we give the most voice to the loudest and angriest people. The University of Florida is not filled with angry people, and it's been wonderful to see a lot of moms have tears streaming down their cheeks as we were able to hold commencements over the course of the last week, and that's because of the fortitude and professionalism in particular of our law enforcement. And finally, to our Jewish students, UF is proud to be home to the most Jewish students anywhere in the country. This is the most Jewish university in the country, and it is great to be a Jewish Gator. I want all of our students to feel safe, but more than the subjective feeling, I want our students to be safe. And that is true today, and we're glad to have you, and we're excited to celebrate a big future together. Go Gators.
All right. Yeah. Leadership. That's what it sounds like. Here are these nonsense merchants just screaming and yelling, and here's a guy who understands how to get a job done, how to stand up, how to have focus. When I discuss concepts of force, and I'm going to get more into it, that's exactly what this is. There is a way to be. There is a way to do things. And there are things simply we don't do here. And these people, these violent, terrible, awful, hateful, bigoted, sad, ugly people who think we should live in fear of them, no, we're not doing that. No one should really live in fear of anybody, right? Just go live your life. But if there's going to be fear, you're going to fear us. I mean, if it has to be that way, it's us or it's them. I choose us. Screw them. And I've got choice words for other than screw. If it has to be us or them. Now, you say to me, it doesn't have to be us or them. And I hear this from people. It doesn't have to be us or them. It doesn't have to be this adversarial. You're absolutely right. Except they made it this way. Now, what do you want from me? They are the ones who are engaged in such a threatening way that USC and Columbia canceled their commencement exercises. Now, if these schools were stronger, they would say, nope. Commencement goes on, and we'll deal with these so-called protesters. But that would take the use of what? Force. Here are these pretend protesters utilizing force, threats of violence, actual acts of violence, to get things canceled and be disruptive. And here are universities, you know, accepting it, as opposed to standing up and saying, we don't take that. We don't do that here. We stand up. And we push back. We don't allow it. As a matter of fact, you sit down or get off our campus. There's a way you act here. Be a professional. Stop being a ridiculous, nonsense, babbling child. That's good. That's valuable. That's important. Necessary. And when I discuss force, that is exactly what I'm referring to. Force is just as equally standing up for the social contract as it is ensuring that someone can walk down the street. The answer to whether or not a Jewish student can walk down the street is the same answer to how you integrate a school. It's the same thing.
Now, as far as watershed moments in American history go, Ruby Bridges is a different moment. But you have to respond to it with force. You have to send in the National Guard. Hot damn, you send in the National Guard to let everybody know we ain't going to put up with the nonsense. We're not going to put up with the nonsense. So don't put up with it. Now, this might seem like I am having a conversation that favors the largesse of government and the power of government. No. I favor the people taking control. I favor the people engaging in the quote-unquote force. We have seen what happens when government is run by ideologues. Here's Los Angeles, California, UCLA. Jewish students aren't allowed to walk on campus. They're threatened over here. They're attacked over here. The police won't do anything for you. The university won't do anything for you. The mayor won't do anything for you. What do? You handle the problem. Tony, that's vigilantism. The system has not only failed me, right? That would be one thing, and that would be arguable. They have announced that they will fail me. They have announced that I do not count. They have announced that I do not matter. In this case, these students don't matter. What should they do? They should do exactly what they did. And now there are people who want to charge them. They actually want to go about charging the students who put an end to the blockades and the madness. They don't want to do anything about those who actually did the blockading. They want to go after the students to put an end to it, at least temporarily. This is Florida International University. And they're angry that they can't get protection. That protection for being anti-Jewish students.
And every single protest that we have, our actions have had counter protesters, and there is never any backlash and never police protecting us. In fact, police are directly protecting counter protesters, even at our events. So I want to ask you all, is Palestinian life not worth mourning? And we as Arabs, Palestinian, Muslim, and anti-Jewish students, are we not worth protecting?
So you admit that you're anti-Jewish students. That's first. Second, worth protecting from what? If you wanted to go and have a rally on a street corner screaming, "We don't like Jews," I'd think you're a bunch of morons. But I would protect your right to say that. If you want to physically assault Jews, attack Jews, or physically barricade Jews from walking down the street, well, no, I'm not protecting that. And screw you and your mother and the horse that you rode in on. Why would anybody protect that? But I love that you admit that you're anti-Jewish students. That is mwah, chef's kiss. What President Sass is talking about here is first of all, actual leadership. Saying that we will not put up with it. Anyone who crosses the line with prohibited action will face the consequences. That's leadership. We have a way of doing things here. We follow the law here, and you don't get to intimidate no one. That's good. Good on Ben Sass. Some other university president should try this. You know, getting a spine and standing up. I'm Tony Katz.
All right.
What to make of this TikTok lawsuit against the federal government? The ban violates the First Amendment, because there's a part of me that would think that that's true. And the problem with the legislation that went through about targeting TikTok, which, don't get me wrong, TikTok is the enemy. The Communist Chinese Party is the enemy. They serve our kids poison, and we should stop it. The problem is you targeted a company, but you did not create legislation to discuss a concept. And I think that's the downfall. Tony Katz today, good to be with you. This bill forces the Chinese ownership of TikTok to sell. That's what it forces. Doesn't force the end of TikTok. It says sell or you can't operate in the United States. The United States absolutely has the ability to say you cannot operate in the U.S. We have people that we put on watch lists, we put on this list, we put on these sanctions, and they can't move this money, they can't do that, etc. The lawsuit that TikTok is filing in the Court of Appeals for the D.C. Court says the bill violates constitutional protections of free speech. For the first time in history, Congress has enacted a law that subjects a single named speech platform to a permanent nationwide ban and bars every American from participating in a unique online community with more than a billion people worldwide. I don't care how many people it has worldwide. I think the issue is that it focuses on TikTok and not entities owned, controlled, or in any way contributed to by the Communist Chinese Party. See the difference in that? I think that's where you need to be. And if I'm the Republican Party, I'm writing that legislation right now. The idea that a foreign-owned nation thinks they can utilize our Constitution against us is just, to me, laughable. The Constitution isn't for the people of China. I'm not angry at the people of China. They're living in a lot of hell. But it's not for Xi Jinping. It just isn't. It's not for him. It is for you. It is for people who have come to China to come to America to make a better life for themselves. It's for them as citizens. It's not for TikTok. But legislation that targets a company as opposed to a concept, I think, is an issue. We said it then. I still believe it's true now. So don't allow any companies to be owned by anything attached to the CCP. Oh, and also no land. Let's do that as well. I'm Tony Katz.